So thanks very much. Thanks for want to thank. I will do that at the end. Maybe for being a fantastic organizer and all the staff, the college staff, and Françoise and everybody to organize this conference. This is very much research in progress, and in fact, I've never presented this research before. And so comments are most welcome at this stage. So I'm always very... this is joint work with Antonin Bergeau, who is there, with Timo Bopart, who is from Stockholm. Antonin is a student at LSE. Pete Clino from Stanford, and Yui Lee, who is at the Federal Reserve of San Francisco. And so the motivation for this research was very much the one that we underlined your work on ICT. You have this big debate on secular stagnation, and in particular Gordon saying that all the big inventions have been done, and that the days of high growth are gone. And some people go as far as saying that growth is a parenthesis that started in the beginning of 19th century and soon. One approach is to one argument that was developed earlier in the afternoon is to say, well, ICT, there is something special with ICT that has been underappreciated by Gordon and others. Another line that we pursue, which is to say, well, in this debate there is the debate of measurement of productivity growth. Is that to which extent productivity growth has or has not been properly measured, and to which extent does it really reflect innovation? And one picture, I don't have the picture here, but if you see the flow of patents over the past 30 years, we had a picture like that in a joint work with Ufuk and Richard Blondel and Antonin, showing that you had an acceleration in the flow of patents over the past 30 years. You had a lot of innovative activities. And always there is this view, why isn't it fully reflected in a measure of TFP growth? Okay, so that also links to the solo quote, we see computers, but not in the statistics. So it's this measurement problem. So the idea we want to push here is a very simple idea. And so in a sense, it's a very simple, maybe you find it too simplistic paper, is that creative destruction, which I don't need to convince this audience that we believe here maybe that it's a key source of economic growth in principles. The big question is that, is creative destruction properly taken into account in measure productivity growth? And in this paper, we argue that creative destruction is not properly taken into account by current measures of TFP growth, and the main argument is based on the following. Creative destruction is typically a new product that replaces a new entrant with a new product that replaces an existing activity. Usually, when you look at quality-adjusted price of goods, which are usually the usual way to measure, to capture productivity growth, you compare the quality-adjusted price yesterday and the quality-adjusted price today. But the problem is you cannot do that when there was nothing yesterday. You see what I mean? That's the problem. So it's very, very stupid how you do. And what typically statistical office, and we believe the BLS Bureau of in the US, but statistical office, because they cannot solve that problem directly, they use a kind of imputation method. And typically what they do is to measure the size of innovations by averaging inflation across products that were not creatively destroyed. So this includes products that were not innovated upon at all, and products that are innovated upon by incumbents, so where you have a yesterday and a today. And they get a kind of average inflation measure, and they impute it to the whole economy. And they say, well, usually I extrapolate this inflation rate to new products. And so we ask here, say, suppose that's what they do,
Okay, we can discuss. You may say they don't do that. They're fantastic and they don't do that. But what the exercise here, he says, suppose that they do that. How much, you know, how much growth is just missed by just this happening? Okay, so then we can have a lot of argument. Does BLS does this? Does BLS do that? We don't want to enter into this kind of argument at this stage. We just want to say, suppose you have a statistical office that operates this way, okay? And we can have a discussion afterwards whether we believe that it does that or not, okay? How much, just by this single fact, how much growth are you missing, okay? And there are other sources of missing growth. In fact, we are not the first to, and I will refer to, you know, we have a whole, you know, we have a literature review, and there are a number of papers that already have pointed at other sources of missing growth. But we just want to say, suppose that you have this one thing, we can argue then later if it is or not, okay? How much growth just by that would be this, okay? And what we want to argue is that it's not negligible at all, you see? And it's just one source, which you should add to other sources that other people have pointed out, okay? That's the exercise, very extremely modest, okay? So the question is, how much productivity growth is, how much is it understated on average from if we are to miss growth through creative destruction the way I just summarized, and we'll be in more detail in a moment, okay? So so read the literature, but you know that there is the debate by Gordon, and so I don't want to go back to that. There's been a literature, very recent actually, and the papers we mentioned are all extremely recent. In particular, there is a paper by Syverson, which is an NBER working paper, that argues that mismeasured growth of the ICT sector cannot be a main source of the observed productivity slowdown. So Syverson says, okay, I believe that there might be a mismeasurement, but it's not a big deal, and that cannot be a source that's not what would explain the productivity slowdown. Just up front, I want to say that we don't want here to contest the fact that there might have been a slowdown. We believe in waves, you see. The question is, how low are we? How low is productivity growth in the US today? It's not contesting that you have, you know, technological waves that have acceleration phase and slowdown and whatever. The question is, even if that's true, when we factor in the missing growth that we see, how much do we add to the growth? And can we really talk about stagnation? Secular, we believe, but stagnation, do we have it? So, in particular, Syverson does not provide aggregate missing growth estimates, as we try to do in this paper. And in fact, so you have, there are other papers there. Of course, I'm not doing justice to the literature. You have papers by Bills and Klino, Bills, Broda, Weinstein, particularly, following in particular the Boskin Commission in 1996. And so you see there are, so but the thing is that you see they typically focus on the subset of the economy. See, Bills and Klino, Bills, they look at durables. Broda, Weinstein look at consumer non-durables. Then you have a whole series of papers that focus on IT and semiconductors and all that, you see what I mean? And the other thing also is that they look, the first two sets of papers look at the average missing over time from, you know, the average mismeasurement. Only the last Syverson, Byrne and Al look at the changing bias. And here we look at, we have an approach to estimate missing growth from creative destruction economy-wide. And we also will look at it over time. You see, we look both on average and over time. So our contribution is to say we want to develop a methodology to say, well, if we want to estimate missing growth from creative destruction for the whole economy, could we do it? And that's how we want to contribute, you see. Whereas everybody else, they've looked at particular sectors and they didn't really have a methodology to look at economy-wide. And that's the main contribution here. The main contribution is to say we have a model, and we use a Schumpeterian model, and with this Schumpeterian model, we have a formula, formulas for missing growth, and we believe that we can use these formulas to provide estimates for missing growth from the particular source we're interested in. So the main contribution is that we'll provide a methodology to compute missing growth for the whole economy, and also our theory allows us to relate missing growth to various kinds of innovation,
creative destruction, incumbent improvement, and others, and to parameters like size and frequency of innovation. So we could do comparative statics on the determinants of missing growth. In fact, when we started to do this paper, we started to do regressions that I will not show here, where we started to regress TFP growth on patenting and for high creative destruction sector or low creative destruction sector. And we could relate the discrepancy between the two, the extent to which one is positively correlated with the other, to things like arrival rate, size of innovation, things like that. And that's where we try to go. So the roadmap will be as follows. I will develop I will show the basic model we develop, and this model will allow us to compute the actual growth rate, the measured growth rate under the assumption that I mentioned before, which we can discuss at the end, and therefore the difference between the two, which is the missing growth, just from the assumption we make on the statistical office. Okay, and then we will say, there are several ways to try and calibrate, to try and estimate the missing growth using the formula we derive. One method we use census data. On market share of entrants, exiters, and incumbents, and the second one, it's very exploratory. We try to say that we could use patent data. We have a very very first cut at that. Of course, in front of UFUK, it's always intimidating now to talk about patents and use patent data. But we want to argue that at least we can have a very first go at it, and we are sure. That it can be substantially improved, but it's a first cut, and we want just to illustrate that we can start to do something. Now, we are not claiming at all that we have the best estimates using patent data. So this is the roadmap, and without further ado, I will present the model. So we have a kind of very Schumpeterian model of a kind that everybody knows in this room. We take a discrete time model. In each period, the economy is populated by mass, by a constant mass of identical. We take it one period lived individuals who consume a finite good. The respect in which we are not fully going into the Schumpeterian model is that we are not endogenizing the arrival rate of innovations here. We take as given the arrival rate of innovation. Of course, we could extend the model and try to endogenize the arrival rates, which we are not doing for the moment, because already we think we can do a fair amount without doing that. Problem, it's good that there is water. I need to get excited when I talk. So you have a finite good technology, you have a finite good, which is produced with a continuum of intermediate inputs. So Y omega denotes the quantity of intermediate input currently used in the production of final good. Q omega denotes the current quality of intermediate input. N denotes the current number of intermediate inputs currently available to produce the final good. And sigma denotes the elasticity of substitution between intermediate inputs. Okay, so that's the final good technology. We assume that the final good technology is competitive, so each intermediate product is paid its marginal productivity, and the intermediate good producer maximize decide how much to produce by maximizing profits, subject to the fact that they are paid their marginal product by the final good sector. Okay, so that's as usual. Each intermediate input is produced one for one with labor, and L omega is the amount of labor current used to produce intermediate good omega. So as I said, final good sector is competitive, each intermediate good is paid its marginal productivity, but intermediate producers are monopolistic, and I assume that labor is freely mobile, so there is one wage rate in equilibrium. So innovation, here we model it very simply, because we don't endogenize innovation here. We just assume that, at any point in time, in any sector, there is an exogenous probability of a new entrant replacing the incumbent firm, and we call that creative destruction. And we call gamma D the step size of the innovation, by how much better the new entrant is compared to the existing firm.
But we also allow for incumbents to improve upon their current technology. So we assume that for surviving incumbents, for incumbents that have not been subject to predictive destruction, they have a probability lambda I to improve upon their own product, and they improve by factor gamma I. Okay. So those are parameters that play an important role. And we allow, although it will not play a big role, in fact, in our pattern calibration, but for the moment we allow for it. We could we allow for arrival of new varieties. So we allow for the number of intermediate inputs to grow over time, and we call gamma n the quality of. We assume that the quality of a new variety is gamma n times the average quality of existing varieties. So that summarizes it, okay? You have the three types: critical destruction, an incumbent replaced by a new entrant at rate gamma lambda d, and the step size is gamma d, or you have a new variety at rate lambda n with a step size gamma n, or you have incumbent, surviving incumbent, improving upon her own product with arrival rate lambda I, and with by step size gamma I, okay? No, it just means that, you know, the new variety may be, you know, we may allow for variety of a quality that can be higher or lower than existing qualities, average quality.
So you're drawing from a distribution, basically.
Yeah, exactly. That's what we mean. Voilà. That's right. It won't play a big role in what follows. I mean, so that's it. I mean, we don't want to make particular assumptions at this stage. So let us get to the main part of the thing. So the what will be important is the inflation, the measure versus actual inflation rate. So we will denote by capital P the aggregate price index, and we will make the assumption that the aggregate nominal final output, which is P times Y, or equivalently, the aggregate expenditure on the final good is correctly measured. So in that case, the missing growth is entirely due to mismeasuring inflation. So you don't know, in fact, if you are really measuring quality improvements or if you are mismeasuring the price increase. Okay. So in fact, here I will be more specific to what I call, you know, the measured inflation and the actual inflation. But if you make the assumption that E, that the growth in E, that ET plus 1 over ET is correctly measured, immediately, the missing growth, which is the difference between the log of YT plus 1 over YT and the log of the measured YT plus 1 over YT, will just be equal to the log of the measured inflation rate minus the log of the actual inflation rate. So now the whole thing is to derive expressions for the measured versus the actual inflation rates. You see, you want to understand what is attributed to quality. You want to see if something reflects, you see what I mean, price increase or quality change, and you cannot infer. Voilà. That's the problem. You know. You know how much pan, you know each goods is aggregated by a price, and you know how many dollars, and you know in nominal terms, but you don't know in this what is inflation and what is really reflecting quality, or reflecting a true increase in real output. The assumption is that you don't know the true decomposition.
But so are you going to assume that you're measuring E correctly?
Yeah. We assume that E is measured correctly here. The source of the assumption is that you measure the nominal correctly. Yes?
But then P is the ideal price index, right? P is the ideal price index. Ideal and good price.
Yeah, exactly. I will derive it in a moment.
Assuming that the statistical agents also using the ideal price index?
They measure, they know correctly the, they don't, well, that's right, they don't observe the actual, what they observe is the E. That's what they observe, and the E and the growth in E. But they don't know how to decompose it into the real, you see, what is truly due to the increase in real output or to inflation in mismeasure. You see, that idea is not new. I mean, the idea that the mismeasurement comes from that is in the other paper. You see, for example, you have new goods and you impute the price like existing goods, but in fact you overstate the price of new goods, and that's a source of mismeasurement. That idea is not new. What is new is that we will have a way to look at the economy-wide implication of this.
Yeah.
That idea is totally standard.
But statistically, it never report a price estimate for the ideal index, right? So when you say it's P hat, still you refer to ideal price index, I guess, but statistically,
yeah.
Agency never produced an estimate for price ideal.
They, yeah, they. I will be precise what they specify or not. So let me get to that, and I will. Voilà, we'll say well done. So let me derive the expression for the P. Okay. So first, we know that each intermediate producer is a monopolist. So the intermediate producer will maximize profits, and maximizing profits, you get a markup over the wage. And if you have no competitive fringe, the markup is just sigma over sigma minus one under the assumed production function for the final good. Okay, so that's very standard. Okay, so that's the P omega. And from the P omega, you can derive the expression for the aggregate price index. And I don't want to enter into a big thing to prove this proposition, such as a final good sector maximizes Y subject to the expenditure being equal to the integral of P omega Y omega. You get first order conditions, okay? You solve, you get, you integrate over the first order condition for each omega. And so what you get is you derive the expression for Y omega. And from the expression you have from y omega, you multiply by p omega, you integrate over omega, you use the fact that the integral is e, the e cancels out, and you get this expression for capital P. And using the fact that p omega is mu you get this very simple expression for the aggregate price index as a function of the q omegas. Okay, so that's a very nice and handy expression. And once you have that, that gives you PT plus 1 over PT, because PT plus 1 over PT, but you know what it will be. You know that P is just mu W, the integral between 0 and N of Q omega to the sigma minus 1, okay? So what you do is that you do that for PT and PT plus 1, and then you get this ratio. That's very simple. You use the fact that this is just 1 plus lambda N gamma n to the sigma minus 1 integral between 0 and nt. You use the fact that you see the q omega t plus 1, whenever you have a creative structure, but they are multiplied by gamma d, the q's. Whenever you have improvement by incumbent innovator, the q's are multiplied by gamma I. Whenever there is nothing, the q's remain the same. And you know that there is a creative destruction with arrival rate lambda d, incumbent innovation with arrival rate y minus lambda d lambda I, and nothing with the remaining probability. So that gives you immediately the expression for the true inflation rate, which is just this expression. So you see you have three components. One comes from new varieties, one comes from creative destruction, and the third one comes from on improvement. And this is the expression for the true inflation rate. And I will compare this to the measured inflation rate under the assumption I made.
So in this expression, where is the product price change for the existing products, the continuing varieties? Is it WT plus 1 or WT?
The existing is this.
The
existing part is this. It's the third term. So you have the term new varieties, you have the creative destruction part, and you have the part that comes from the improvement by those who have not been treated yet. So the assumption is that among those who have not been subject to creative destruction, there is a fraction lambda I that experience on improvement.
But for these products, you see the price change.
Absolutely. That's how I get to the. You're getting the legal measure. Absolutely. So that's it. You're already anticipating one step. Hmm? Yes.
So here, I mean, it's a less here I'm under laissez-faire. Huh? I'm not looking at if you could have a shock that would, affect the price. Huh? So here we are not taking that into account. So you just suppose that you have a laissez-faire, and just you have this problem of mismeasure and how much you're missing. I'm not on top of that. It would be interesting to say what happens if you have a shock monetary policy that would have a direct effect on the price. I don't know if Timo, you have anything to say on this.
You're looking at the data. So
sorry?
You're looking at the data, so it's because you're taking over the
test. I think if it's completely passed through, then it would immediately show up in the W's.
So
just wait
for
it to go up and do
because it. We assume that the wage is also.
But it's not interesting for us because the going to claim that the statistical office is observing the wage.
Exactly. We observe that they observe
the wage. So.
They observe all the E and the wage. Voilà. Yes. Yeah, here we assume that labor is totally mobile across sectors. There is only one wage.
Do you have any sense as to whether allowing different wages for new incumbents or new varieties of
would be would introduce another source of mismeasurement? That could well be. Here we are assuming in a way that I suppose we are extremely, you know, apart from this thing, we have to see that everything about SP and everything is appreciated and just let's see what do you get from there. And then on top of that, some people have looked at the fact that you have the law of one price is violated, for example, because you have friction. People don't go immediately to the new goods. And because there is a switching cost to new goods, the new goods, are, in fact, the new guys need to underprice something which is not taken into account by the statistical bureau. That's an additional source. So there have been people like the one I mentioned, Byrne et al., who look at the friction as an additional source of potential mismeasurement. So I gather, following the same logic, that you could, on top of what we do here, but here we just abstract. We want to go for minimalist, let's assume all those away, and already we get something which is substantial. But we believe deep down that there are all these other sources, they are there, that add to what we have. Okay, so that's the true inflation rate, okay? So now you look, what about the measured inflation rate? And what we'll assume is that the statistical office. Alors here, there is a note missing. You see, that's what was late in the evening yesterday. That's not factoring the contribution of RIT expansion to growth. There is a huge note that should be in the first sentence, obviously. The second thing we assume is that for pre-existing products, the statistical office cannot observe the innovation coming from creative destruction. Instead, it computes the aggregate quality-adjusted price growth for the entire economy as being equal to the average price growth over existing products that are not subject to creative destruction. You see, so I will be more formal in a moment. In fact, letting lambda I hat and gamma I hat denote the measure frequency and size of incumbent quality improving innovations, measured inflation rate would be this. You see, you would ignore the lambda D. You do as if lambda D doesn't exist, you see what I mean? And you would just get this measured expression. Alors, there's been papers that have made a big deal out of gamma, out of the lambda hat I not being lambda I and gamma I hat not being gamma I. We, again there, we are being extremely conservative. And so let's assume that they get it totally right for the numbers, okay? Which is, again, the potential source of there are papers on that. We abstract from it. So we say that they do perfectly well. But the thing they don't do is that they don't know how to take into account creative destruction. So in that case, it's very easy because you have the expression for the true inflation rate. You have now the expression for the measured one, but now where the hats go, the lambda I hat is lambda I, gamma I hat is gamma I, and you look at the difference in logs, and you get this very simple expression for the missing growth. So you have a missed variety component, and you have the missed creative destruction component, which is this second term, okay? And that's the expression that we are playing with. You see, I mean, that's the main contribution, a main contribution of the paper, is to say we have an expression for economy-wide missing growth using this methodology. So, for example, what you can do, just as a matter of illustration, is to say, take a special case, you know, make sigma go to 1. I mean, when sigma goes to 1, you get the limit case to the log. Okay, so you have then the log case here. So that gives you this expression for the aggregate price index, and just for the purpose of pedagogy, if any, and you get in that case a very simple expression for the missing growth. So you have the first term is the variety, and then the second term is the creative destruction part. But you see, what's nice is that the second term, which is the one we are interested in, where did I put my? You see, I lose everything, so I've lost the pointer. But if I had a pointer, I would have used it. And the pointers evaporate. Yeah. Anyway, it's no big deal. What I've done with it. Don't worry about this. Look at the second term. You can decompose it into two terms. So one term. So the creative destruction term can be decomposed as follows. The first term in the decomposition captures the fact that not all incumbents innovate. And the second term captures the step size differential between entrant and measured incumbent innovation. And what's very interesting to notice that even in the case where if you have the same step size for creative destruction and incumbent innovation, you would still have missing growth from the fact that not all incumbents innovate. And obviously, this expression you can check is the limit of the expression I had in the previous slide when sigma goes to 1, which is exactly what you want. But you see those are very simple expressions, and they are intuitive. So that's the theory, okay? And now what we do is that we will try to say, well, from this, is there with data, can we go to the data and do something out of it to provide economy-wide something about how much we miss from creative destruction. Yes?
I have a question about the connection between the theory and the data.
Yes.
Slide 21, the formula. On slide 21, you had a question about the elasticity of substitution.
Yeah, but we will get to the elasticity of substitution. Yeah, absolutely. When sigma goes to infinity, you have no missing growth. So on the elasticity of substitution, I want to answer right away. What we do there is that we look at the existing literature. There is a whole debate, and we don't want, and the contribution of this paper is not to make a contribution on sigma, our view of sigma is, because we don't have any view of ourselves on sigma. So what we do is that we took the sigma, which is essentially the sigma that, if you look at Broda, Weinstein, the DC literature, they take sigma between 3 and 5. And we try 3, 4, 5, you know what I mean? And we focus on sigma equal 4. But voilà, we have nothing to add on the sigma. By the way, it could also be that the sigma varies. Here we take the uniform sigma, the sigma could also vary, and that may also be a source of mismeasurement, but that goes beyond. We want here to have the kind of most stupid thing, and already from there, and a very simplistic view that you have a uniform sigma. And the sigma we take is a broader Weinstein compatible sigma. Voilà, that's my way. Maybe Timo, you want to add to this. And that's what we do there, because we don't want to have a paper on our view. Personally, I don't have any view on sigma. And it's intimidating point of view to argue anything on sigma after your presentation this morning. Okay, so what we do here is that we estimate missing growth using the market share of entrant firms, incumbent firms that stay in the market, and exiters. So here, what we do here, that's the limit of this part, and then you say, well, because of that, I don't buy it, but it's just here what we do is we try various things. None of them are perfect. All of them are unsatisfactory in some respect, but at least they show a way forward. Okay? And so here, in that part, we will assume a single variety per establishment, so that creative destruction and brand new variety come from entering establishment. You may not like this assumption, and then in the pattern calibration, we make other assumptions you will not like, okay? But we go with things that are equally unsatisfactory, but they are unsatisfactory in different dimensions, okay? I'm sure it can be improved upon. But it's just to show how we go about it. So let SITT denote the aggregate market share in period T of the set of firms that operate in both periods, T minus 1 and T. We call those continuers at T minus 1. So a continuer is someone who operates at T minus 1 and is still around at time T. That's a continuer, okay? There are new entrants at time T, there are exiters between T minus 1 and T. We are interested in the continuers, okay? And we look at the, what's interesting is that for continuers, you know the market share that they represent and I will tell you later how we measure the market share in a moment, but there is their market share at time t minus 1 and their market share at time t, because they are both there at time t minus 1 and at time t. And they may not have, and they typically will not have the same market share, okay? So the nice thing is that you can compute the ratio of SIT over SIT minus 1. You can see that we don't have more light here, because the way we do is the following. First, we know that the share, the market share of product omega is the share of spending on product omega is P omega Y of omega over E. Okay? But we know what Y omega is. We derived Y omega before. So when you substitute for this Y omega there, you you get this expression for the share of intermediate product omega. When you have the share of this intermediate product omega, then you can compute, you see, the share of continuous at time t minus 1 as the aggregation of all those products of their shares. You see what I mean? And you just aggregate among them. And that's their shares at time t minus 1, and the other one is their share at time t. So what's interesting is that then you can compute the ratio. And the ratio is an interesting object, because the ratio, you see, you can see that the ratio, and that's this part, I'm thinking we're gonna have light there. So I can look at the ratio of the continuous at IT over the market share that they represent at IT minus 1. Use the fact that P omega is mu W, both at time T and at IT minus 1, and therefore you can re-express this this ratio. In fact, it's WT over PT divided by WT minus 1 over PT minus 1 times this ratio. But this ratio is very easy, because you have, those are the continuers. So among the continuers, there are the incumbents who do not innovate, and the Q omega is remain the same. That's a fraction 1 minus lambda I. And there are those who innovate, and the Q omega is multiplied by gamma I, but because it's to the sigma minus 1, you get this gamma sigma minus 1. And so at the end of the day, it's a very simple expression that you get for the ratio of market share of continuous at time t over market share at time t minus 1. But remember that the measure inflation was this. So now you see from there, you know that you perfectly measured that you have the ratio of pt over pt minus 1, but of course it's the same for t and t plus 1. So you have the true inflation rate that you get from the upper expression. You have the measure of inflation that you get from there. And in fact, that gives you immediately the missing growth, and the beauty of it is that the missing growth is a very simple function of the ratio of the share of the continuous at time t plus 1 over their market share at time t. You see, it's a very, so you can just use, you look at continuous, you look at their market share in two consecutive periods, and you look at the ratio of that, and it gives you immediately an expression for missing growth. And so you can just use it, and that's what we do. So now the question is how you determine, so 1 second, so I'm done with this. Oops. Okay, so so now intuitively, there is one thing that you note from this expression. Looking at this expression, you note the following. You note that if the market share if the market share of continuing incumbent shrinks, you will have missing growth. You see what I mean? So the true growth will exceed measured growth whenever the market share of continuing firms shrinks. And so, and the intuition is very simple. It's because the difference between true growth and measured growth is equal to the difference between true growth and the average incumbent productivity growth, okay? And the market share of incumbents shrinks whenever the average productivity of continuing incumbents grows more slowly than the average productivity of the economy. And that's the intuition behind it. But you see, what's very nice is that you get at the end at a very, very simple expression for missing growth, for economy-wide missing growth, just looking at market share. And so what we do now is that you have, the question is now that how do you measure the market shares of entrants, incumbents, and exiters? In particular, how do you measure the market shares of continuers in two consecutive periods? Yes.
So what about the question of new products within a firm? So is there introduction and creation of destruction of products within a firm, which has been documented? It seems you'll have basically the same problem within the firm. So the share with formulas works if all the actions at the level of the firm.
We look at establishments.
Establishment.
And we will see, we will look at firm and establishment, you see the things change a lot. So that already gets at your question. So we assume somehow that one establishment is one product. Okay? But we see that indeed you're right. If we were looking at firm as the unit, you get very different conclusion if you look at establishment, which shows that you are. And that's the limit of this approach. And if you didn't like the idea of one product establishment, that's where we need to go beyond this approach and go, for example, to the patent approach, which has other drawbacks. Maybe later. Let me push on this, and then we can go back to what I want. So the longitudinal. So what we do is that we use the longitudinal business database that covers all firms' plants with at least one employee over the period 1976-2013. And in fact, we focus on the period 1984-2013, and on all non-farm private sector firms' plants. But in fact, it's mainly plants that we are interested in. And we will look at two ways to look at market share. One is employment share, and one is payroll share. And we will do for both. But the estimates we get are very similar between one and the other. Okay. And so what we will do is to infer the market share of continuers at T minus one and of continuers at IT from this, the information we get from the longitudinal business database. And so the question is, how you do that? Okay. And now is how we do it. Okay. So now, how is the dirty tricks we play? Okay, so those are the... So we let capital B denote the first period of operation of a plant, okay? And D denote the last year of operation of a plant. And let L of T, capital B less than B, and D less greater than small d, the total employment or payroll, it depends when you look at one or the other, at time T, of plants that were born before period small b or at period small b, and die after or at period small d, okay? And so that's the, and we know that because we know who is the born when, who is dead, disappears when, and everything. Okay, so now the remember that the missing growth is here, okay? We are interested in the log of this thing, okay? Or IT T minus one, we are interested in the log of this ratio, okay? But how we proxy this ratio? We proxy this ratio like this. This is the share of continuers at time t minus 1, at time t minus 1. And this is the share of continuers that go from t minus 1 and continue on t at time t. And that's the ratio that we are interested in, okay? And that's the log that we take, and 1 over sigma minus 1, that log, is our measure of missing growth. Okay, so that's what we do. And now there is a small issue there, and the small issue there is the following: is that how do we measure the ratio in the data? So you could say T is the year that you look at. So you remember B, and you have the L of T or T minus one. That's the year you are at. That's no problem. The question is, which capital B will you take? Will you take as capital B the first year the plant appears in the data set, and capital D the last year the plant appears in the data set? That would amount to assume that entry and exit in the data correspond to entry and exit in the market. But in practice, entering the NBD database does not necessarily mean that you fully enter the market. Because first, typically take time to accumulate customers and get market share, okay? So what we can do is either to use exactly when you appear in the market, in the data set, is when you appear in the market, or we can assume that in fact you appear in the market with a sub lag compared to when you appear in the data set. So we are flexible with respect to that, and we allow for a lag of k years where k varies between 0 and 5. Okay, so you have the case where you assume that when you appear in the data set, exactly when you appear in the market, and we let the lag go up to 5 years, okay? So if, for example, you take a sigma equal 4 and a lag of 5 years, then you can reduce the lag, and you can try anything you want. You get, that's the missing growth you get using market shares here is employment. And what you see is the missing growth does not go down. It remains pretty, you know, it's... the missing growth that we get is in percentage point per year, you know, remain has not gone down over time. Quite the opposite. And what's interesting is that you can add to the we have the measured growth, and we the measured growth has gone down. So that you can add the missing growth to the measured growth. Now it's true that it has gone down, but you see still the US at 1.6 true TFP growth. You know, here we have a finance minister. Last year, we were at zero. He said it was great news for France. If we were at, now we are 1.6, we think we are in total nirvana, but 1.6 is, I don't call that stagnation, personally. Huh? Yeah, it's clearly going down, but it's still, you see, you are adding substantially above the measured growth. Now, what you can do is to vary. For example, you can say you use employment shares or payroll shares, but you see, it doesn't vary much between whether you use employment or payroll, things are very much comparable magnitude. The other thing you can do is that you can look at establishment versus firms, then it makes a difference. Yes? We use so far payroll and employment. So for some reason we haven't used sales yet. But yeah. Yeah, that's something that we... So if we had used new firms, there you see you get very different figures from the missing growth than if you use establishment. Okay, that shows it. And the other thing we do is that's why we make K vary between 0 and 5. So those are the figures when we take K equal 5. When we take K equal 0, you get lower missing growth estimates, okay? And then the question is, where do you think K is? Well, we believe very much that there is this delay, you know, between the time you enter in the data set and the time where really you enter the market. But then it's a matter of, you know, we are not taking a position there. We just say, well, that's we have a model. You can choose, you know, the when you decide what your capital A will be, and with sigma equal 4, but you can change sigma, you can change K, and you get, but you still have a very simple formula to estimate missing growth using market shares. And that's the contribution we make. Yes? Sorry?
You have not checked any year in between?
Between 0 and 5?
Yes.
I think we have, but I don't have the slide. It's very much, it's monotonic. It goes from 1 and then...
I think
voilà. Yeah.
Five,
you think is too long. But we don't want to debate on these kind of things. You see, I mean, that's not the point. It's like the sigma. We don't want to debate on those. You say, well, we have a formula. We have we think it's reasonable to believe there is a delay, and we think that sigma equal 4, given the trade literature, is not unreasonable. But we don't want to take a stand on that. The contribution is just to say you have a way to do it economy-wide. There is no paper that looks at missing growth economy-wide with a very simple formula. That did not exist so far. And it's just a missing growth from one source. So there are many other potential sources of missing growth that we are abstracting from. Okay. So how long do I have left? 1 minute? Oh my God. Alors, what we do then is the patent data. The other method that we use is to use patent data to directly calibrate the lambdas and the gammas. Okay. So one thing is, one advantage of the patent method is that we no longer need to assume one variety per plant anymore. Okay. So the drawback is, of course, to present that in front of Wufuk. So the first thing we did was to start from AxiDeepCare 2010, Because using Census Bureau and patent data, they calibrate a model where incumbents can perform internal or external innovation. Internal, you improve upon your own line, and external, you improve and you do creative destruction on the line of someone else. And you have also new entry there. And so the model is not exactly, it's not comparable to us. It's more like a Klete-Kortum type of model, which is not what we have here, but it's very similar. They derive values for the step size of what they call internal and external innovation, okay? And what we do is to use their calibration to map with us. So they have new entry, external by incumbent, internal by incumbent. What we do is to say, your new entry is our creative destruction. Your internal by incumbent are our improvement. And you assume already that the step size of new entry is the same as the step size of external by incumbent. We take that as being the step size of creative destruction, and we assume that your step size of internal by incumbent is our gamma I, okay? And say, just do this. What do you get? And if you do that, if you just do that, you get, and the other thing we do is that we assume no new product creation. We assume lambda n equals zero. You have the other paper with Pierre and Nicolas that makes a good case that it's not, you know, that it's very sensible to abstract from a variety. And so, and if we do that, we get a missing growth, a ratio of missing growth to true growth equal to 0.29. And what's very interesting is that we took the market share approach with the new plants and the sigma equal 0.2 equal 5, we were getting a ratio of 0.25, which is very similar thing, so very different methods. And you get similar, so it's not that they go multiplied by 10 or, you know, that's, so we thought that was appealing, okay? One thing there, just is that of course the relationship, the drawback is that of course in your model you don't have missing growth. So the lambda, the relationship with the lambda and the gamma does not factor in missing growth. So we said, could we do directly calibration using going to patent data and calibrate our model directly? You see, not using your own estimate. So we did something, and we use patent data to directly estimate missing growth from our model, not going through what you had done. What we did was this. We said, well, let's take patent database up to 2013, restrict attention to 1980-2007, define an entrant patent as an entrant patent if it's assigned its first patented less than 3 years before the current patent application, as an incumbent patent if the assignee first patented more than 3 years before. Okay. And more generally, you have an entrant index because you may have several assignees for each patent, and you know each of them if they started to innovate long time ago or short time ago. So you get a kind of index for each patent of how much incumbent it is or how much entrant it is. And we made additional assumptions because you see we don't. The problem is that one product is not one patent in our data. Okay, and so we need to make assumptions to map the patent data to the lambdas and the gammas. And the assumption we made was to assume that the average value of the entrant index is the arrival rate of creative destruction. Then we use a BRDIS survey that tells us that annual share of 10% of firms are reporting product or service innovation per year. And combined with patent data, we get a rough estimate of the total arrival rate of innovation. Third, we assume that the probability of a patent to correspond to creative destruction is equal to its entrant index. And finally, we assume that step size are proportional to citation received by patents within a five-year window. And therefore, we can estimate the ratio of the gamma D over gamma I. And so when we do this, we find, again, what's interesting is that, again, doing this, we find, again, a ratio of missing growth to measured growth of 0.25. You see, I mean, that's doing these things that we did at the beginning. Of course, you know, you have much more sophisticated methods because you could map patents with firms, which you could not do. But just doing this rough exercise, it's interesting. We just got back to a similar, ratio of missing growth to true growth. You see, now the disadvantage with you is that you have much more detailed data and a mapping between patents and firms. Because of course one product is not one patent, we abstracted from that. The drawback is that you were using a model where you didn't have missing growth factored in. But what's interesting is that at the end, we get to very similar estimates. And so if you have a measured growth of 4.72, which is what Clems believes you get a 1 percentage point per year missing growth on average, and of course goes down when you, for example, you assume a lower missing measured growth per year. So the conclusion is that in this paper, we developed a Schumpeterian growth model with incumbent and entrant innovation to assess the unmeasured TFP growth due to the fact that the statistical office uses the price changes of surviving products to infer the price change of the replaced product. This model generates explicit expression for the missing TFP growth as a function of the frequency and size of incumbent versus entrant innovation. We use two calibrations. The first one explored micro data for the US census on employment shares or payroll shares of incumbents, entrants, and exiters. And the second calibration used direct estimates of arrival rates and step size of innovation. And the remarkable thing is that using both approaches, we find that TFP growth is underestimated by an amount equal to roughly 25% just from the assumption we made on the missing creative destruction by the statistical office. Of course, you know, there are many avenues for further research is to look at other sources of missing growth, to go back to the patent data and do the patent part much more in detail, maybe redo exactly what you did in your paper with CARE, but with a model that factors in missing growth from the start. And another avenue for future research is to endogenize technical change and analyze how optimal magnitude and mix between creative destruction, incumbent, and expanding variety is affected or not by the missing growth that we uncover. That concludes what I wanted to say. Thank you.